Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. My guest today is Craig Taylor, author of the new book, New Yorkers. Craig, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. Thanks.
Well, if someone hasn't heard about your new book, New Yorkers, yet, how would you describe the book?
Well, New Yorkers is a nonfiction book. It's an oral history of sorts. I like to think of it as a nonfiction novel of sorts, where there are almost 80 different narrators, all of whom just happen to be real human beings living in New York, all of whom have a point of view on the city. The book is really about voice. So we hear the New York vernacular through their voices. We hear them describe the ups and downs, the beauty and the tragedy of living in New York right now.
And what led you to interview so many New Yorkers and write this book?
I had done a book in London called Londoners that came out in 2012. And that had just been such a fascinating and deep way of getting to know a city, interviewing all of these people involved in different walks of life. And so I was given the chance to go to New York and speak to 200 New Yorkers. I just would have been an idiot not to take that chance. So I leapt at it and I moved there in 2014 and began the process. As you can imagine, these books take a long time. You have to seek out people, find them, talk to them. And so over the following years, that's what I did. I just tried to find some of the great talkers in the city of New York.
And what was that process like in terms of finding the people that you did interview for the book?
It takes a long time. There's a lot of myths and the hidden myths of this sort of work. Thankfully, it takes a long time. I think good projects can only evolve over time. I wanted it to be a book that felt sort of lived in. And so I did have a list of verbs that I applied to New York that would help me find people. And so I was interested in tracking out people who were enacting actions in New York, who were sort of pushing it forward, who were cleaning it or who were policing it or who were pest controlling. You know, I was finding people who were doing these verbs again and again in the city. And so it became a book more about action and less about people sort of musing about New York. I was more interested in the elevator repairman and the 911 operator and the dog walker and the window cleaner, those kind of jobs, people actually working with the city every day.
And what was your kind of interview technique? Did you sit down? Did you walk with them in the city? Were you recording them? What was some of the kind of interviewing process and technique for you?
It was all of the above. I mean, I walked around endlessly, often accompanied by someone who was eager to talk and to share. The main thing was time, you know, and allowing people to speak about what they wanted to speak about. So I never enter into any of these encounters with much of a list of questions. I just want people to talk about their own city. And so that inevitably takes time. It's not sort of an in and out 5-minute Q&A. It has to be storytelling. People have to sort of talk about their lives at length. And so that happens in a variety of places. I was always reticent to list the places where I actually conducted the interviews because, you know, New York, as in many big cities, is just so dominated by a sort of nowhere New York chains and coffee shops that could be anywhere. And so often I found that, you know, our conversations would start in these nameless chains and then they would deepen. And then often people would take me to more interesting parts of New York. So there was a relationship between the interview itself and the locations that would start kind of bland and formal, but then we'd move into more interesting subjects and we'd move into more interesting corners of the city as well.
Sure. Well, it seems that the story of New York in any era is a story of surviving hardships. In the last 20 years, New Yorkers have survived a terrorist attack, hurricane, recession, blackout, and most recently, the pandemic. When you were talking to the New Yorkers that you interviewed for your book, were there any common themes that you came away with in terms of surviving and thriving in the city?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you picked up on that because, the book is really about the vibrancy and resilience of New York. And as you've just listed, there are some huge events that have happened and shook the city in the last 20 years. And so I was really interested in exploring these different varieties of resilience and speaking to those, obviously, who were involved in some of the major events. So, for instance, there's a father who speaks about Hurricane Sandy, clinging to his daughter in the floodwaters, tied to each other with a sweatshirt. There's the 9/11 cop who's dealing to this day with a degenerative nerve disease brought on by the toxins that he encountered. And of course, there are the healthcare workers, the voices of the nurses in the book, who were wrapping bodies of COVID patients and are obviously still dealing with that. So I was very much, focused on the big events that have happened in New York, but there's also a smaller kind of resilience, a day-to-day resilience that appeared in a lot of the interviewees, including there's an interviewee in the book named Elliot Carter who recycles cans, who walks the length of Manhattan picking up cans. And I was interested in his story, especially, this sort of day-to-day resilience that we don't necessarily celebrate, but it's truly extraordinary, and seeing and learning about how a person lifts themselves up out of poverty, changes their life in a city that makes that very hard to do, I thought was a great example of another kind of resiliency, one that doesn't necessarily make the headlines, but is nevertheless incredibly important in New York.
Well, some people say that due to the current cost of living in New York City, the city is no longer feasible for young people or artists or creative people, which have always played a really big part, at least in the modern era of New York. Given your discussions with many New Yorkers, do you think that belief about the city is true?
Yeah, there was a lot of anger that I found in the artistic community. There was a lot of sadness. There was a lot of mystification, maybe. I think of the words of the owner of a recording studio I spoke to, Steve Rosenthal, who was in a great position to voice all of these concerns. He had started his recording studio at Soho years ago when it wasn't quite a welcoming place to be. He had hosted there some of the great artists of our time to make, these permanent records, these beautiful pieces of music that we still listen to today. This is the place where David Bowie recorded his two final albums. This is a place that is incredibly important to the cultural life of New York. And yet, he wasn't able to buy the building. He was kicked out, rising rents kicked him out. And so there is a sense, in the words of a lot of the people I spoke to, that what we value about New York, what we love about it, is being pushed away, is being sort of denigrated, or at least not celebrated. He makes the point that, there are people now coming to New York, tourists perhaps, or people who are coming for the first time to live there, who are wandering New York trying to find a city that no longer exists, a city that is fertile, that is welcoming to artists. And that is a real tragedy, and that's something that I hope those who believe in art fight for in the city. It doesn't, as Steve says, it doesn't necessarily affect the higher level. It's not like MoMA is going to disappear, but the sense of someone moving there to create, to, as so many artists and musicians and writers have, I think that's really in danger of disappearing, and that the energy is shifting to other places. We can see that.
Sure. Well, some people on that same note have said that COVID and the number of people who have moved out of New York City, obviously the ones that can work from home as opposed to the interviewees that you mentioned earlier that are physically working in the city, cleaning and et cetera. What I was going to say is a lot of people have said that with the number of people who are moved out of the city, that the city has changed forever. Do you believe that?
I think it's too early to truly tell, but it will be an interesting next chapter. the pandemic has given license to people who were maybe on the fence. It has allowed people who kind of wanted to move to get out. It has allowed a lot of rich New Yorkers the chance to pick up stakes and get out of what they see as an unsafe, unhygienic situation. So what that's going to mean in the future, I'm not sure. All I can say is that I hope, you know, an optimistic part of me hopes that it will allow for some sort of transformation in the city, for some sort of...
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
A critical look at the income inequality in the city. And I hope that it does allow for a transformation that brings about something more vital. Perhaps it means that those who want to be in New York now, or those that really value it, they're not just there because they have to be there or they work there. But I think that's the very optimistic view. There are lots of other factors, obviously. But I'm going to cling to my optimism for now and see how it shakes out. I really hope that this is a turning point for the city that allows it to transform into something more equitable for people.
Sure. What do you think that non-New Yorkers don't understand about the city and the New Yorkers who live there?
Well, I think New York is never an inert presence in the lives of any American, certainly. There is nowhere that you will go in the U.S. and say the words New York and have someone shrug and say, well, I've never really heard of it. I've never really heard of the place. Tell me more. New York is just such a powerful force that it's... that everyone in the U.S. has some sort of relation to it. Some people think they'll never go there. They're terrified of it. They've heard all the stories. It's not for them. Others dream of it from the time they're 13 years old and want to get on that Greyhound. So I think this book ultimately is about people. You know, they could be any city. Some of the stories are just about love, about aging, about reaching the end of one's life, about struggling to find meaning. But I think all of those things are just amplified in New York. There are people think about those issues all the time. At least that's what I found. And they were able in this book to really voice issues. I think perhaps people outside of New York don't realize that it is an incredibly compassionate city. That's what I found when I was there. We all know about the hard edge of it. But again and again, there was this compassion that was described to me. You may be called upon as a New Yorker. You may have to reach out your hand and help your fellow New Yorker. And I just heard so many stories of people called upon to do exactly that.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, as we were discussing, COVID hit New York City particularly hard at the beginning of the pandemic in the U.S. last March and April in the summer. Do you know if any of the people you originally interviewed for the book were lost to COVID?
Yeah, there were some interviewees who did die. One of my dear interviewees, her mother died. And then there were people involved in the book who went through it. So the COVID section of the book is sort of centers around one of the major figures in the book, who's a personal injury lawyer from Queens named Dan Bousso, who's a wonderful guide, who acted as a wonderful guide for me all over the city. And in March, around this time last year, he emailed me saying, with the subject line, "I'll never forget," something for the book, saying that he'd gone into hospital and he was positive with the virus. And thankfully, Dan lived, but his story of facing the virus in the hospital is one that's included in the book. And I think hopefully captures the way that some New Yorkers dealt with the virus. I mean, the way that Dan dealt with it was to set down a chair in front of him, an empty chair, and address it like it was COVID and tell it that, you know, it's not going to take away New York. It has no right to come to this town and think that it can destroy this place. And so I found that both in Dan's words and in the words of the nurses that I spoke to, there were themes that were universal, themes of resilience. And, you know, I'm sure healthcare workers all over the country know how tough it is to work through this time, but there were also moments that were quite New York, you know, that those who were dealing with COVID were dealing with it in a way that was unique to the city.
Well, I'm sure you love all of your interviews that are in the book, but are there one or two interviewees that particularly stand out that you want to mention?
Yeah, I mean, just to come back to the idea of compassion, I always think of the subway conductor, Sal, who I spoke to. And in some ways, you know, his job is day after day the same thing. It's got a rhythm, it's got a routine. But he was able to speak to me about these moments that for him stood out, including one where he held the hand of a woman as she died on his platform. An elderly woman died, and he was there. He was asked to be that human being who was going to be there in the last few minutes of her life. And he did that, and he didn't know her. He only knew her first name. He always wishes that he could tell her family that he was the person there holding her hand. But, you know, to me, that stands out as just one moment in a city where millions of these moments are happening. That's just when someone is called upon to be compassionate. So that really stands out. And then some of the zanier stuff too. Like it is a city that is quite wild in so many ways. And speaking to the Salvation Army guy who dances in front of Penn Station, and the pizza guy who knows the city only through its pizza, and the Macy's Day Parade captain. There were a lot of joyful moments too, as there have to be in a book about New York, because it brings about such a love in itself, in its citizens.
Sure. Do you have any specific memories or anecdotes from your own first visit to New York City?
I went there quite late. I was 24, I think, when I first went to New York. But like many people, I had a constructed version of the city, romanticized from all the films that I'd seen, the television shows, the late night shows. And so for me, there was this alchemy almost that occurred when I took my own version of New York to the actual place. And it's a thrilling moment. I'm speaking, I'm sure, for millions of people who have done the same. When you step out and you sort of fuse those two images together, your own image and the reality of what's there. So it's always been it was a magical place then. And when I was given the chance to go there and live there, live out parts of my life there, I leapt at it. And it was a tough place too, you know, a very, very hard city to be in all the time, a power that can, you know, elevate some and really, really denigrate others, hit others very hard. So I think my relationship with New York is always complex, as any relationship with the city has to be. But wow, I am enthralled to its power still.
That's great. Well, as someone who obviously loves New York, do you have any favorite New York City novels or nonfiction books that you would recommend?
Absolutely. And as you know, the list is huge.
Yeah.
But for me, there were a few guiding light books. And weirdly, the Guardian just asked me to list them, so I have them right here. But I'll mention to you just a couple that are that might be under the radar. One is a set of poems by a young poet named Yana Prickroll. It's called No Matter, and she's a New York poet. And the book isn't necessarily about New York, but it's just it for me. It just captures so many ineffable feelings about the city, and I think sometimes when you're dealing with the reality, when you're talking to people in the sewers and talking to electricians and you know all of these different people, it's good to pull back and read poetry about the city too, to be reminded of the language that can be applied in this, you know, in a really beautiful abstract way, and she does that beautifully. There's also The Odd Woman in the City, a book by Vivian Gornick, which I absolutely adore, which is, you know, about a woman, an older woman walking New York and just looking at New York and thinking about the city, thinking about the books, thinking about her life, thinking about her loves, and doing so in just such a smart and gimlet-eyed way. So I really, really love those books. And then The Long-Winded Lady by Maeve Brennan, which is in a series of vignettes that were published in The New Yorker in the 50s and 60s and 70s that capture all of those little moments that unfold between New Yorkers. So those would be my three choices that I really dearly love.
That's great. Well, where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you and your new book, New Yorkers?
I can be found online at my website, craigdtaylor.com. The D is for Delta. Well, the D for Delta, that's not my actual middle name. And at on Twitter at CDLTaylor. So those would be the best ways.
Great. Well, again, we've been speaking with Craig Taylor, author of the new nonfiction book, New Yorkers, which we just discussed as a collection of interviews with New York City residents. The book is on sale now, so go buy a copy. And Craig, thanks for doing this interview.
Thanks so much, Jeff. I appreciate it.
Great.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.